So it's great, it's heartening to see people take to the streets and make their voices heard, you know, put themselves on the line saying no, you know. That is great. I want to see more of that. I want to see more people, you know, get fed up and demonstrate their outrage, because these people don't care about words. They don't care about news specials and debates about, you know, what happened to Eric Garner or, you know, Freddie Gray or whatever. They don't care about words. You can talk till you're blue in the face. They don't care about that. People have to take action. And the reason why people did not take to the streets after the bombing of MOVE, it's not because they were against MOVE and agreed with the bombing. They were tricked and confused because, well, it really comes down to racism. Racism is a double-bladed axe. Wilson Good, the mayor at the time, was the first black mayor of Philadelphia. And despite the murder of black babies, people's mantra was, we have to support our first black mayor, despite everything, you know? That is some serious confusion there. Serious confusion, you know? But what happened to me and my family always comes to mind when I see cops killing people out in the street, because I know why they feel like they can do it. And with grand juries not indicting them and, you know, their bosses, etc., backing them, that's why they feel like they can do it. That's why we cannot look to this system, any agency of it, any representative of it, or anybody that believes in it, for any kind, you know, of respect or action against these things. It's not going to happen. Yeah. Yeah?
What did they charge you with, and what happened to the other survivor?
Birdie, the little boy that survived along with me, he was turned over to his biological father because they did not want him back in MOVE. His father, biological father anyway, a man named Andino Ward, had nothing to do with Birdie since he was an infant. And Andino and Birdie's mother, Rhonda, separated and divorced, and she ended up coming into MOVE. Andino had nothing to do with Birdie all those years. The government drug him out of the woodwork to take custody of Birdie, and he was all too willing to do it, not because he loved Birdie, but because he saw dollar signs. He figured, pretty much knew that Birdie was going to get something out of that. And so he agreed to take custody of him. And from what we understand, because he wouldn't let him have any contact with us at all. And once Birdie, you know, grew up and was of an age where he could have contact with us, he tried to contact me. His aunt called me and was saying that Birdie was asking about me, how I was doing, and was having some trouble because his father, Andino, had encouraged him into the military. And he was just having problems, yeah. And I told her, tell him to call me. Come see me. He knows we love him, you know. But we don't know what kind of pressure and influence came into play, because he never ended up contacting us. The last we heard of Birdie, he was on a cruise ship with Andino for some kind of anniversary, celebration thing, a Caribbean cruise. and he drowned in a hot tub. Birdie was an excellent swimmer. Hot tubs are not deep. You can stand up in a hot tub, you know. According to Andina, Birdie didn't drink or, you know, take any kind of drugs or anything, and I wonder where he got that from, you know. So apparently, you know, he wasn't out of his head or anything. How could he drown in a hot tub? But that's what they said. That's what they said. All I can say is it wouldn't have happened in Moo, because he wouldn't have been on no cruise ship in a hot tub if he was in Moo, you know. in terms of me, they came out to our home, the police, on not Monday, May 13th, but Sunday, May 12th, Mother's Day of 1985, and started to set up their weaponry of war. They had their 38 sidearms, 9mm Uzis, M16s, rifles, sniper rifles with silencers. Silencers are the weapon of an assassin. Why would they need silencers? They had a 50 caliber machine gun, a 60 millimeter automatic rifle, a 20 millimeter armor piercing anti-tank gun, and C4, the makings of a bomb. Yet, I'm in my home with my family, minding our business, when we're surrounded with hundreds of cops aiming to kill. They charged me with everything that they did. But when they came out there on Mother's Day, they had warrants for four of us. That's it. Me, Conrad, Teresa, and Nick. They charged us with disorderly conduct, terroristic threats, which was ridiculous. Once May 13th happened, once they dropped that bomb and, you know, everything happened, when I went to court, I represented myself, they had to drop every single charge in the warrants that they came out there with. Now, once they admitted by dropping the charges in the warrants that they came out there with, that they were, there was no validity to it, no basis to those charges, and dismissed them, shouldn't that have nullified everything that came as a result of that? Makes sense, but not to them. They charged me with a second set of charges. Charges that came as a result of what happened after they came out there. You know what they charged me with? Everything that they did. Arson, possession of explosives, risking and causing a catastrophe, conspiracy. They planned and rehearsed and practiced for over a year, we found out later, their attack on Move. But we conspired. We conspired. Everything they did, they charged me with. Finally, at the end of the trial, after some charges was dropped and I was acquitted of other charges, I was convicted of riot. I was sentenced to 16 months to 7 years. When my 16-month minimum was up, the parole board interviewed me and ended up telling me that they would release me, parole me, if and only if I agreed to sever all ties, all contact with any Move person. Well, I told them what they could do with that stipulation. I wasn't agreeing to that. My sisters and brothers that became eligible for parole around that same time, they approached them with that stipulation. None of us would accept it. So myself, Alberta, Sue, and Mo Africa, I think it was just us four, we maxed out on 12-year sentences, 7-year sentences, 5-year sentences. But we kept the pressure on the parole board by exposing them and that unconstitutional, illegal stipulation they were trying to put on us. And people around the world was contacting the parole board, questioning them about it and criticizing them for it and everything. They finally paroled two of my family members without that stipulation. They had to back up, as is always the case with MOVE and this system. It is always them that gives ground and not us. Not us.
Yeah.
Okay. One or two more questions. Get them in.
Yeah, hi. This was beyond informative, even though I was living in the city in 1971-72. I'd just like to say that it wasn't until a month ago that I set foot at 62nd and Osage. I was only at 16th and Pine, but or 2nd and Bainbridge, whatever, all these million years. But I never stepped foot at 62nd and Osage until I saw a Facebook notification saying that Glenn Davis was giving organizing a commemoration, an MLK 50-mile commemoration, just like we can't all be in Selma, we can't all be in Manhattan, we can't all be in D.C., but we're right here. So he set up this 50-mile thing over 5 days, and the one I called March for Voting across Philadelphia, and replicated the whole 50 miles that came from Montgomery to Selma, which of course, because publicity is so horrific in this town, nobody knew about, you know, because it wasn't endorsed by Power, and it wasn't endorsed by this one and that one. What? Like they're about different things instead of the same things. So anyway, I get a little passionate, if you notice. So I said, well, I'm feeling lousy, but I can go to this one. And I took the bus up Walnut Street, and I met them at 62nd and Osage. And me and two of your brothers and this old Jewish grandmother schlepped around for an hour and a half, and then I got on the bus and went home because I couldn't schlep anymore. But otherwise, I had a tour that was so priceless, and I have it all on tape.
Okay.
Of every single thing that went down. And if you don't know Glenn Davis in your neighborhood yet, running for city commissioner on the Green Party ticket, he's not a politician, he's an activist.
Okay.
Anyway, you gotta know him. So, and there's a reason you don't know him. Same reason you're talking about.
Yeah.
We don't know a lot of things
it.
And a lot of
I
people.
I get it.
But this is what upsets me right at this minute, amongst the thousands of other things hourly. The fact that there was no provision, I hope I'm wrong and you're gonna tell me I was wrong, to videotape this event. You tell me, was there an official videographer prepared to capture this? No. Just horrible.
What I meant was we did not consent for you to videotape people in this
Well, place. I don't have anybody in this. That's the other thing. Everyone's so afraid.
Is it audio tape?
Everyone's so
Is it audio tape? It's audio tape.
Yeah, audio is one thing,
yourself, lady.
But nothing to do with videotaping, capturing it. And if everyone's too afraid, who in here is afraid to be on video?
Okay. Okay. All right. We got one more question, and then we're going to have to break it up.
Why wouldn't that be ready, since you are the most powerful speaker.
Why wouldn't what?
Relevant speaker on this subject in the whole world, right here.
Why wouldn't what?
Why wouldn't it have been?
We have a video on the group of the
video. Well, it wasn't covered then. Doesn't matter. It didn't happen.
I don't know. Okay.
Okay.
All right, we got one more question, and then we're going to have to wrap it up. Go ahead.
Thank you so much for speaking. Long with me tonight. And I think you speaking is so important because of the loss of historical memory over time, the past 30 or 40 years since the MOVE bombing has happened and has been taking political prisoners. The state also does everything to make MOVE invisible. So I wanted to ask you, over the last 20 years or so, what are the most promising strains of revolutionary struggle you see happening in Philadelphia? And how do you see younger revolutionaries who are coming up without that historical memory? What do you see your role being in generations of young people who are confronting the police and waking up to the violence of the system?
Well, in terms of how I see my role, I see it simply as somebody who sets an example, is obligated to set a revolutionary example for people, particularly young people, and also to keep revolutionary information out there in the minds of people, not to hammer people over the head with it, but when this system provides us with such clear examples that we can give people and show people, we're obligated, I feel obligated, to point them out to people, you know. In terms of promising or encouraging examples over the last 20 years or so, that's what you're asking, what do I see? Oh, I guess it would have to be young people. Young people today have a lot of energy and a lot of fight, especially this sister Erica. I was in a demonstration with her a few days ago, a week ago or so, and that is a fiery sister. She holds no hostages. That encourages me and gives me, you know, hope and encouragement. Yeah. All right. On the move. Long live revolution.